Shalom, damn it, shalom everybody, happy new year to you, happy holidays to everyone. This is Rabbi Saul Solomon here, and I am so thrilled, I am so delighted and excited to be back on the radio. Well, it's not really the radio because it's just on the internet, so it doesn't count as much, but for me, it all counts because I'm able to reach you with the joy and the beauty of Yiddishkeit and all things Jewish, semi-Jewish, and in this particular case, not even particularly Jewish, because I have a guest, a goyish guest. I think this is the first time I've ever talked to one of these people. So forgive me if I'm a little flustered or I don't know what I'm saying. It's just I'm trying to protect what I have spiritually. I think I can do this, but you never know. That's why we tune in. Anywho, the person that I'm going to be talking to is a veteran actor. Someone who is now doing a play off Broadway in New York at a place called the Workshop Theater. Means it isn't quite ready yet, they're still workshopping it. I don't know, I'm just guessing on that. But the show, this is why I was attracted to this, it is a play. A dark and sad, but a little funny, but mostly sad play called Next Year in Jerusalem. And it takes place, the plot is in a Seder, too. So I'm very excited about this, and I'm excited to talk to one of the stars of this play. His name is Bert Edwards. He is not Jewish, but I welcome you anyway. Bert, how are you?
Hello there, Rabbi. How are you?
Oh, let me teach you a Jewish word. Let me teach you Shalom.
Shalom.
Say it again.
Shalom.
Now say it and mean it, like hello.
Shalom.
Now you're talking, goddammit. That's beautiful. That's wonderful. So how many years have you not been Jewish?
How many years? Tell you my actual age. It's 81.
Are you really?
81 years old.
Oh, mazel. But this is so lovely. This is exciting. And you still, can chew your own food. And you don't wear plastic underwear.
That's true so far.
And
how long that will last is anybody's guess.
But this is what you can get up there and do. A show? What is it, 8 times during a week?
No, this show is only 5 times a week. Remember, it's off Broadway.
Oh, it's 3 offs. Oh, good.
The equity contract, we can only do 5 shows a week.
Oh, and for how many weeks? Well, when is this running?
It's very short. 3-4 week run. Because, we're contracted with equity, Actors Equity, so we have to go abide by their rules.
Of course, this is
and
true.
They allow only so many rehearsals and so many performances in this type of contract.
Please, you know that Hashem, that God and Moses, had 613 laws of Jewish life. Equity has 7,000. This I do not understand. Equity has 10 times more laws. Well, no, it doesn't, but you do the math. I don't have time. So, what drew you to this play besides the paycheck, which you may not even be getting?
Well, that's true. That's very true. No, it's just a beautiful play, I believe. And it's about an old gentleman who wanted to Poland. He was born in Poland, and he married his wife in Poland.
Okay.
And this was back in the 1940s, and he wanted to go to Israel to help build a country there.
Okay.
His wife resisted, but she did go. But after they had been there for a while, she was determined to have her children in America.
Smart girl, smart lady. Yes.
Smart lady. So they came to America. He had relatives in Brooklyn, and they settled in that area, and he became quite well off. He built a company of his own. His wife died and left 2 daughters, one of whom he gets along with beautifully, and one he doesn't get along with beautifully.
You know, I have 19 and a half children.
19 and a half?
Yes, and I don't get along with any of them. It's very sad.
Well, I hope you get some hope for the half-child that's coming along.
Possibly. Depends. If the head takes its proper shape at a certain point, it'll be all right. But I didn't mean to interrupt, but I'm sorry about doing it. Continue, please.
Okay. Well, the play was written by a lady named Donna Leslie Goldstein.
Ah, oh, there we go. That's my
there
kind of girl. Yeah.
Vaguely autobiographical.
Oh.
About her grandfather and cousins and things like that, who settled in Brooklyn.
You know, I'm vaguely autobiographical, too.
Are you really?
Just vaguely, yes.
Just vaguely.
So they come to Brooklyn, you settle down with the children, one of whom is a beautiful, nice girl, and the other is, you should pardon the expression, a biatch. And
well, she's rather free-minded.
Oh, okay.
Put it that way.
A slut.
And
my favorite. No, that's okay. Continue. I'm sorry.
Father, whose name is Abraham, that's me.
Yes, you.
Has tried to raise the girls so that they have comfortable, well-regulated life. And my oldest daughter, who is named Rahel.
Is named what?
Rahel.
Rahel. Oh, you're trying. I like the way you... Let me teach you. I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but this is what the program is all about. Can you do the ch?
Say that again.
Can you do the ch?
The ch.
Oh, that's good.
How's that?
It's got a hook in there. It's Rahel.
Now, you tell me something, Rabbi.
Yes.
I have to say something. She was my best shot. Is that the correct pronunciation of that?
Well, I think you're overextending it, but that is the right word. It's bashert.
Shert.
Bashert.
Cut it down a bit.
Bashert, yeah. It's like bashert. It's not bashert. Not like Sonny Young Bashert. It's bashert. She's the one for you.
And I say, oh, I'm kvelling.
Kvelling? That's very good. Kvelling. You're kvelling. You're happy. You're proud. Yes.
Yes.
What other words do you need to check?
I think that's the only one. You know, I was saying saber for a while instead of sabra.
Oh, no. No, Sab. They're very different things. The Arabs were using sabers to kill the people in the sabras.
That's
how it works.
I'm so glad they caught me on that one.
So am I. So, you're in Brooklyn. You got the children. What the hell happens?
Well, the oldest daughter, my favorite, Rahel,
Rahel. Wait, how do they spell it? How do they spell that?
R-A-H-E-L.
Oh, forgive me. You're right. It's Rahel. I thought it might be Rachel, but you're right. I'm sorry.
Well, everybody else calls her Rachel. So I figured I don't know. Anyway, it's written as Rachel. R-A-H-E-L.
All right. Anyway, yes. Sorry. My fault.
And she's married and has a charming daughter, but there's like 12 years difference between the two daughters. My daughters.
All right.
And the play picks up when I'm in my late 70s.
All right.
And I've established a good home in Brooklyn. In where is it? Not Brighton, but Manhattan Beach.
Okay. We say Manhattan Beach.
Manhattan Beach.
Much better. Okay. Yes.
Manhattan Beach.
Right. This explanation is longer than the play at this point. So what happens?
Well, it happens that the old man is dying, and they have the last seder.
Seder. Seder. A seder. You've never been to a seder?
Seder.
Good. Thank you. Have you ever been to one for real?
Never.
Really? In your 81 years,
I've
no
been
Jew?
To a bar mitzvah.
Well, all right. This is good.
Some I learned not to go too early to a bar mitzvah because they go on forever.
You just go for the food. That's the thing to do. So
that's what I say to my daughter when she walks in. See, you're just here for the food. No time for the prayer.
Pretty much. This is the... Come on, when Jews go to the synagogue on a Saturday morning, they all show up at 11:30 because they know at 11:45, the food is there. It's only the schmucks who show up at 9 to sit there for 3 hours waiting. What? Waiting to eat?
You've learned a lot, Rabbi Solomon.
I'm a wise old man, what can I tell you? I'm wise enough to know that, okay, you're at a seder, you're old, you're dying, not you personally.
Seder, and then there is a young... One of my lawyers is named Ariel Cohen. And he is from Israel, in America. And he rather disturbs me by saying that he wants to be an American. He thinks that, you know, being in Israel, and he fought there, and he thought he's glad he doesn't do it anymore. You know, and it really disturbs the old man.
Okay.
So they have quite a little set to with that. And but he becomes very attracted to my youngest daughter, who finally arrives at the seder. Very late.
All right.
And they become an item.
Wait, how old is he?
He's 79.
And she's?
The young daughter?
Yes.
Oh, she's like 35. 30.
Okay. Whoa! That kind of play, is it?
Also, the fellow that plays, there are flashbacks in this play.
All right.
This play
is 7.5 hours long!
Very nice play. But this fellow that plays Ariel Cohen, my lawyer, also plays me as a younger man in Israel.
Okay.
So there are flashbacks in those scenes. I'm a little too old to play myself as a young man.
Just a little.
So he plays those roles. And the girl that plays my wife is a lovely, lovely actress. And she sings at the Seder, sings in Hebrew, all of the, you know.
The prayers,
But, and then the little daughter does the four questions.
Right.
And I praise her for that and say it's better than last year and all that sort of thing. And as the play goes on, my lawyer friend is there, the young Ariel Cohen, and he and I get into this discussion, Brother Heath's discussion.
Yes.
About his feeling about the, I guess you would call it non-Zionist. What is a non-Zionist?
It's basically Jews who are stupid enough not to believe in Israel. That's what I, that's my definition.
Not to believe in Israel?
There are Jews who... You have to understand, pardon me, you're asking me for an explanation, I'm giving you one. There's Jews who feel that when Israel is existing now, it is keeping the end times from happening, and when all the Jews in all the world get to go to Israel and everything happens good, we shouldn't be in Israel yet. These are very stupid people who think that we really don't have a homeland, that it's a bad thing that we created one. But the rest of us, the Zionists, the smart Jews, say, no, we need a homeland or else we get wiped out entirely.
Yes, that's what I thought.
Right.
I thought I had it right. But for instance, one of the things he tells me is that Seda, this Israeli lawyer.
Yes.
It's 50 years ago, sir, and you are not Israeli. I am. What that means now is very different from what it meant to your generation. I have been hit by more rocks than I can count.
So am I.
Of my breath, while grenades exploded too close to me, I could feel the higher air vibrate. I have no desire to live that way. I say next year on the Upper West Side, which is very offensive to the old man.
Well, okay, I understand. I see the conflict there, and it's a good conflict. I can absolutely...
What is that, a joke? Some things, young man, are worth anything, worth giving up your life for. You don't leave because it's ugly. That's what you have to stay. And it goes on from there.
Interesting. By the way, is that the accent? How long did it take you to work on the accent that you're using for the old man Abraham in this play next year in Jerusalem?
Well, not too bad. I mean, it comes pretty easily.
Did you talk to any Jews, or how did you just come to you, or did you watch it?
Oh, I've done a lot of accents in my career.
Okay.
Of various kinds.
Now, speaking of accents, let's make a little time to talk about your previous roles, because there were other shows that you did that must have been shorter than this one, that you appeared in, like, such as you were on Broadway opposite Yul Brynner.
I was indeed.
Oh, my God, Bert Edwards, how old were you when this was 1985, correct?
Yeah, I was, what, 55, something.
Oh, so you were not quite a spring chicken, but you were...
No.
What was it like? Tell us some Yul Brynner stories.
Yul Brynner's last, final, you know, he did the play 3,000 times.
Yes.
From 1950 until the end of his life.
Right.
And this was his last tour and Broadway production. We toured for about 8 months in what we call a sit-down tour situation. It's playing cities for 4 or 5 weeks, big cities. And then he had contracted for six months in New York.
Right.
And we came in to New York, and he was getting sicker and sicker, and had to cut down on some of his songs, like Shall We Dance? They had to cut that in half.
And in fact, it's now, it was just, Shall We? That was, please go on.
So, I remember when we were playing St. Louis, and Mike Wallace came out to do an interview with him. And Yul said, I want to do another little piece of this, which cannot be shown until after I die. And he did a piece about condemning cigarettes, pleading with people not to take up smoking.
Right.
And they did not show it until after his death. But when the play closed in 85 in New York, he was very sick, very sick. And he had never missed a performance in his entire life until those last 3 weeks of the run. And, of course, he had an understudy, but they wouldn't allow the understudy to go on because, you know...
Everybody paid to see Yul Brynner, of course. Yeah.
And it broke every record on Broadway at the time. But about a month or two after that, he was gone. He died.
But do you have any personal memories of him besides him coughing, perhaps, or any little anecdotes, any thoughts about him as a performer?
Not terribly approachable.
Right, I heard that. Yeah.
A wonderful man. He was very good to me, but he could be a monster to some people.
Oh, tell me, who did he attack?
well, like the mothers of the kids in the play that traveled with the show. He could be just fierce with them. Like the leading lady understudy went on one time, and he was very unpleasant to her. He could just be a monster when he wanted to be.
Was there usually a reason, or was it just he was on bad cancer drugs, or just his personality?
I think it's mostly personality. That was a wonderful man. He really was.
Well, it was wonderful to you. I think
he was really wonderful to everybody, seeing that they were well paid, and you know, everything was. It was first class. Working with him was first class. Every city we went into, the dressing room had to be painted brown. That was a peculiarity. I remember.
Maybe it's because he was coughing up nicotine and he didn't want it to show on the wall.
That makes sense, but it wasn't true.
Exactly. White brown.
And also another thing.
Yes?
He had bodyguards around him constantly. Two stage right, two stage left. And I thought, nobody knew why. But a New York one performance, my school scene was just before he enters. And as I was going off stage, a man crawled over the orchestra pit and said, "He's my father, he's my father." And those bodyguards swept him away.
And stars live in a different universe. They really do. Not just the solar system, but there's something about what they attract sometimes.
Very true. Very true.
Now, speaking of attractive, you have appeared also in the theater with some great leading ladies of our time.
Yes.
Kim Hunter, Tammy Grimes, someone named Phyllis Thaxter, who I had no idea who it is.
No, Thaxter was.
I'm sorry, no, I'm not that old.
She was a wonderful actress back in MGM back in the 1940s.
All right.
And played a lot of semi-lead roles. She was never a big star, but she was well-known in her day. And Tammy Grimes, I got along very well with Tammy.
Good.
I liked her a lot.
All right, very good.
Very nice lady.
Good. What about Kim Hunter?
Kim was a divine lady. She really was very, very good. I would say that of the eight ladies I played that show with.
Wait, which show?
It was The Cocktail Hour. A.R. Gurney's Cocktail Hour.
Yes, all right. Goyim know about cocktails.
Nancy Marchand in New York.
Nancy Marchand, right.
But of all of them that I played it with, Nancy was Marchand was by head and shoulders the best. No question of that.
I hope the other ladies aren't listening right now.
I hope not either, but they were all wonderful in their way.
Now, what made her, if you were an acting teacher, if you were just a student of the form, how would you can say, she was the best, but why? What made her the best?
By the time I went into it, she'd been playing it for a year.
Okay.
And I took over for Keene Curtis, who was the original male lead in the play. But, Nancy was absolutely familiar with the play. But she was a very excellent actress. Nobody will dispute that.
No, I'm not saying, but I always want to know what makes a difference, say, between a fantastic actress and a really good actress. What is that quality?
That's a hard question, Rabbi.
Oh, well.
Very hard question.
I ask the hard questions, damn it.
A lot of it's instinct, and a lot of it's craft, training, a lot of it's just being who you are.
Well, what would you say, Bert Edwards, what would you say is your special quality as an actor? What do you bring to the table?
I hope it's honesty.
Okay.
That's what I strive for, you know, to believe what I'm doing. And not to think of other things while you're on stage, but concentrate on your role.
Well, let me ask you, since you did The Cocktail Hour how many millions of times, was there a point when you're standing there after the 500th time and going, what's for dinner? I gotta pay the bills.
No, never to me.
Always right there in the moment.
It was such wonderful pleasure to be doing it.
Is this true?
Acting is a lot better than working in a dime store, you know.
Now, have you been able to be an actor consistently from when you started? Did you have to take other jobs, or was this always your only profession?
I've always taken on jobs. Often. For a year, I was a manager of the Automobile Club in Virginia.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
The travel department there that was about 10 years. So I've done other things. And in New York, I've done, you know, little jobs on the side here and there. Just to support myself.
Of course.
And when I was in L.A., I did a lot of voiceover work, and that kept me going. And, you know, a lot of TV things, films and stuff like that, but nothing major.
And is it tough now that you are in your 80s? Do you find yourself up for more roles, fewer roles? Are you getting maybe more now than you were in your 50s? Because that's a double.
Many fewer.
Okay.
I'm out of the competition business now. I do this play because somebody asked me to do it. I don't go to auditions because, I mean, who wants an 80-year-old man? It's an insurance problem, for one thing. You know, they think you're going to die before you finish the show.
They should look at Michael Jackson. He was 50. No, I know what you're saying, but is it great to tread the boards again then? Does it feel like coming home when you step on the stage?
Yes, it does. It's a pleasure, the greatest pleasure in the world. When you do something that you really want to do and have the opportunity to, I think of this show as my swan song.
Oh, well,
I'm crying about it, but.
What, are you in good condition? Are you healthy? Do you have all your eyes?
Although I'm just getting over a broken foot.
Oh, how'd you do that?
Oh, I tripped on something in my apartment while cleaning a house. But tomorrow they take the boot off. You know the boot you have to wear sometimes?
Oh, yeah.
They take that off tomorrow, and I should be able to get into a shoe then.
Well, I want to see you dancing and running about that stage and having a wonderful time in next year in Jerusalem, this dark drama that's 95 hours long but sounds really, really good. Remind
Thank
us.
Thank you, Rabbi Solomon.
Is that the Workshop Theater when?
It runs from October 8th until October 31st. It's just a short run.
October 8th through the 31st. How can people get tickets to see you in this show?
They can call 212-695-4173, extension number 5.
Say that again, please.
Online, they can go to www.theatermania.com.
Oh, Theatermania, I know them well. Say the phone number again, please.
212-695-4173, extension 5.
Now, I never thought I would say this to a non-Jewish person, but Bert, I look forward to seeing you next year in Jerusalem.
Rabbi, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. God bless you. Happy New Year.